Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Tolles, bringing you this episode of Southern Living Magazine, dated December 2024. In today's program, we will read Straight Out of a Movie. Designer Shannon Eddings helps a young family revitalize a 1938 Tudor in the heart of Dallas. The Delicious Mystery of Court Bouillon. This famous Louisiana dish has French and Caribbean roots and a curious history. And the Grumpy Gardener answers gardening questions from readers. And now for our first article. Straight Out of a Movie by Cameron Beal. High school sweethearts and Dallas natives Elizabeth and Charlie Bennett knew they wanted to end up near family when kids came along. They just didn't realize how close it would be. I grew up on the same street as his house, and Charlie's parents live a mile away. So it's pretty special to come full circle back here, surrounded by helping hands, says Elizabeth. Upon hearing rumblings about an old Tudor home being advertised as a teardown in their desired neighborhood, the Bennetts took one look and knew it was meant to be. We get sad whenever we see old houses being torn down, so saving one was a goal of ours, she said. Although the English cottage-style facade was exactly what the couple was looking for, they knew it would take some work to make the layout more efficient. To stretch its 2,445 square feet and retain the footprint, they added a few walls and knocked down others. Upstairs, an oversized bedroom was divided into two kids' spaces, a shared bath, and a laundry area. Downstairs, two rooms were joined to form a primary suite, complete with dual closets and a spacious bath. They also turned a closet under the stairs into a powder room, opened up the cramped kitchen for more functionality, and flanked the fireplace in the small living room with built-in window benches to maximize seating and storage. The pair brought on Austin-based designer Shannon Eddings to assist in tackling the renovation and pushing the boundaries with color and pattern to show the home's true character. Between the original diamond-paned windows and the green punctuated palette that naturally lends itself to festive adornments, the charming abode feels like it's something straight out of a Hallmark movie during the holidays, says Elizabeth. Photo. A hint of whimsy. Ottoline wallpaper sets a cheery tone in the girls' room. Fabric inserts accent the closet doors, splashed with Benjamin Moore's lily pad 480 to match the ceiling. An heirloom bed frame balances the daintiness. Photo. Let it glow. The old windows were a big selling point for us, says Elizabeth, who hung a simple wreath on each. Photo. Pile in. The family of five takes a 1981 Toyota Land Cruiser, named Rita for its margarita-like hue, for a spin around town to see the Christmas lights each December. Photo. Gather round. I feel like formal dining rooms are underused, so I love this spot because someone is always sitting at the table, says Charlie of the home's only eating area, which is swathed in a wallpaper from Lake August. A table from Elizabeth's grandparents anchors the pass-through space along with the banquet. Photo. The adjacent wet bar, painted Farrell and Ball's Sudbury Yellow number 51, breaks up the surrounding green-doused rooms. Photo. Start your wish list. When rethinking the kitchen, the couple, who love to cook, prioritized more counter space, an alcove for the range with nooks for convenient spice and oil storage, a pantry, and backyard access. The Dutch door was a must for me from the get-go, says Elizabeth. It's a special touch that feels nostalgic. Photo. Sticking with the color scheme, Shannon coated the cabinetry in Farrow & Ball's Green Smoke number 47 and installed beaded board for texture, limiting the Klee tile backsplash to the range area so it was more cost-effective. Photo. It's okay to play favorites. When it came to furnishing the living area, there was one non-negotiable. The piano had to fit. We truly built the room around it, said Shannon. The piano has been through a journey, explains Charlie. It was the one Elizabeth grew up with, and it was given to us when we got married. To continue the green theme, the designer chose Lee Stripe from Lisa Fine Textiles for the window treatments, using a combination of drapes and Roman shades to make it more budget-friendly, and recovered the couple's well-loved sofa in Jasper's Indian Garden in green. Photo. Fresh cuttings and red ribbons were added throughout the home, while stockings graced the mantel and treasured ornaments adorned the Christmas tree. Photo. Recognize that less may be more. To maximize the limited space, the designer focused on two elements, window treatments and paint, both inspired by the rug from Elizabeth's grandmother. One of the things Charlie said from the beginning was, "We really want grown-up drapes," says Shannon, who used a Zach and Fox fabric Elizabeth found to create floor-to-ceiling panels for a sense of grandeur in the small room. As for paint, the designer opted for a moodier shade, Farrow and Ball's French Gray number 18, to balance the ample natural light. I like to match the walls, trim, and ceiling to create a cocoon in the bedroom, she says. The cozier corner is also outfitted with a vintage painting, a thrifted side table, and a plush chair. Photo. Leave no shade behind. For a tone-on-tone look in the primary bath, Shannon used Farrow & Ball's Card Room Green number 79 on the walls and Cooking Apple Green number 32 on the cabinets. I love how the color kind of changes in the light, Charlie says. The couple's other musts were a clawfoot tub, which often hosts bath time for the little ones, and the dramatic tile. We knew that we wanted to have checkered floors somewhere in the house, says Elizabeth, and I feel like they really pop with the green for a cool combo. The Delicious Mystery of Court Bouillon by Jessica B. Harris. As a food historian, I am always attempting to find the genesis of one recipe or another. Where did peanut brittle come from? How did the Huguenot tort get its name? Usually, tracing a dish's source is a road with many twists and turns, and, more often than not, there are varying stories. As an expert on the cuisine of the African diaspora, I am frequently struck by how common it is for the African hand in the pot to be overlooked when folks are attributing origins. Take court bouillon as Creole specialty. If you look it up, you'll see that it is a French term for a seasoned broth used as a poaching liquid. There are several variants of the spelling. You can find it in classic cookbooks as court bouillon, coubillon, coubillon, and even couvillon. In Louisiana, it's typically a tomato-based stew with seafood that is served over rice. All sorts of recipes will tell you that it's a poached fish dish that's essentially a Provençal bouillabaisse adapted to the Gulf Coast, but there seems to be no relationship other than the name to the standard French court bouillon. How does this happen? The tomato does bring hints of the Mediterranean, and in many ways, the recipe is like Marseille's fish stew, but without the shellfish and the rascasse, red scorpion fish, that are considered essential in a bouillabaisse. While there are certainly echoes of the south of France, I suggest looking for the answer in a different direction, the French-speaking Caribbean. In Guadeloupe, one can discover another possible connection to the court bouillon that's a New Orleans favorite. I was introduced to it there by my maman, Guadeloupe, the late Carmelita Jean, a Creole second-generation chef and a stalwart member of the Cuisinières, a group of women chefs who are guardians of the culinary traditions of that island. At her table and in her restaurant kitchen, she made me a spicy, tomato-based fish stew that's a closer match to the Louisiana kind than the much-touted bouillabaisse. In fact, it's like a fraternal twin and even goes by the same name, court bouillon. The stew's brightness might make some think of summer, so it was a surprise to discover that it has long been eaten by many Creole families in New Orleans at this time of year. For that reason, I included it in my 1995 book, A Kwanzaa Keepsake, that has just been reissued with a new foreword by Carla Hall. Celebrate the recipe's origins and the holidays by serving it with a playlist of Louisiana jazz and Guadalupean beguine along with the usual seasonal songs. Big Easy Flavor. This is a variation on the redfish court bouillon that is traditionally served in many of the black Creole homes in New Orleans at Christmas time. Here, though, instead of using an entire baked fish, snapper fillets are poached in the Creole court bouillon, which resembles a sauce more than the classic French court bouillon poaching liquid. You may wish to serve this as an entree or as an alternative main dish along with the roasts that usually appear on the holiday table. Red snapper in Creole court bouillon. Active, 1 hour. Total, 1 hour. Serves 8. Here are the ingredients you'll need for the red snapper in Creole court bouillon. Olive oil, all-purpose flour, medium-sized yellow onion, green bell pepper, celery, chopped scallion, garlic, allspice, white wine, large tomatoes, bay leaves, flat leaf parsley, thyme, red snapper fillets, black pepper, kosher salt, fresh lemon juice, minced hot chili, such as Scotch bonnet, hot cooked white rice. Now here are the exact quantities of the ingredients. 1 tablespoon olive oil, 2 tablespoons all-purpose flour, 1 medium-sized yellow onion, finely chopped, about 3/4 cup, 1/3 cup finely chopped green bell pepper, from 1 bell pepper, 3 tablespoons finely chopped celery from 2 large stalks, 2 tablespoons finely chopped scallion from 2 scallions, plus more for garnish, 1 tablespoon minced garlic from 3 garlic cloves, 1/4 teaspoon ground allspice, 1/2 cup dry white wine, 8 large tomatoes, peeled, seeded, and chopped, 6 cups, 2 fresh bay leaves, 1 tablespoon finely chopped fresh flat leaf parsley, 1 teaspoon fresh thyme leaves, 8 4-ounce red snapper fillets, 1/2 teaspoon black pepper, 2 1/4 teaspoons kosher salt divided, plus more to taste, 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice from 1 lemon, 1 to 2 teaspoons minced hot chili from 1 chili, such as Scotch bonnet, plus more to taste. hot cooked white rice. You're listening to Southern Living Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, Carol Tolles. Continuing on. 1. Heat olive oil in a large, heavy, non-reactive, deep-sided skillet over medium-low. Slowly sprinkle flour in skillet. Cook, stirring constantly, until a tan paste, the roux, forms, about 2 minutes. Add onion, bell pepper, celery, scallions, garlic, and allspice. Cook, stirring constantly, until fragrant and onion is translucent, about 3 minutes. Add wine. Cook, scraping up any brown bits from the bottom of the skillet until mixture is smooth, about 1 minute. Add tomatoes, bay leaves, 2 cups water, parsley, and thyme. Bring slowly to a boil over medium. Cook, stirring often, until tomatoes are cooked down and thickened into a gravy consistency, 30 to 40 minutes. 2. Sprinkle fish fillets with black pepper and 1 1/4 teaspoons of the salt. Nestle fish in a single layer in tomato sauce in skillet, spooning sauce over the top to fully cover. Reduce heat to low. Cover and simmer until fish are cooked through 5 to 8 minutes. Transfer fish from skillet to a heated platter to keep warm. Stir lemon juice, chili, and remaining 1 teaspoon salt into sauce in skillet. Cook until flavors meld, about 3 minutes. Season with additional salt and chili to taste. Spoon sauce over fish. Garnish with more chopped scallions. Remove bay leaves. Serve hot with rice. The exact ingredients again that you'll need for red snapper in Creole court bouillon: 1 tablespoon olive oil, 2 tablespoons all-purpose flour, 1 medium-sized yellow onion, finely chopped, about 3/4 cup, 1/3 cup finely chopped green bell pepper, from 1 bell pepper, 3 tablespoons finely chopped celery from 2 large stalks, 2 tablespoons finely chopped scallion from 2 scallions, plus more for garnish, 1 tablespoon minced garlic from 3 garlic cloves, 1/4 teaspoon ground allspice, 1/2 cup dry white wine, 8 large tomatoes, peeled, seeded, and chopped, 6 cups, 2 fresh bay leaves, 1 tablespoon finely chopped fresh flat-leaf parsley, 1 teaspoon fresh thyme leaves, 8 4-ounce red snapper fillets, 1/2 teaspoon black pepper, 2 1/4 teaspoons kosher salt divided, plus more to taste, 2 tablespoons fresh lemon juice from 1 lemon, 1 to 2 teaspoons minced hot chili from 1 chili, such as Scotch bonnet, plus more to taste. Hot cooked white rice. Recipe excerpted from A Kwanzaa Keepsake and Cookbook by Jessica B. Harris. Copyright 1995, 2024 by Jessica B. Harris. Reprinted by permission of Scribner, an imprint of Simon & Schuster, LLC. Food Styling, Emily Neighbors Hall. Prop Styling, Lydia Purcell. The Grumpy Gardener by Steve Bender. Dear Grumpy, is it wrong to feel bad about cutting down a Christmas tree to decorate for a few short weeks? When I see those majestic spruces standing at the White House and Rockefeller Center in New York every year, I know they're at least 50 years old and must be absolutely shocked at how pitifully their dreams were cut short. Lift my spirits, Grumpy. Dale. I know the feeling, Dale. I always wanted to be a roller skate repairman, but then Southern Living snatched me away in the dark of night to write about gardening. So much potential wasted, it is to weep. But I got over it, and you can too. One way is to purchase a pre-lit artificial tree. They're very lifelike. You buy them only once, and they don't drop a needle even if you leave them up until June. So many seedlings. I had one large rose of Sharon in my front garden. Then I took my eye off the ball due to travel. Now I have 12 huge rose of Sharon plants growing in the middle of my rose bushes. What do you suggest to keep seedlings at bay? Kimberly. Older types of rose of Sharon, Hibiscus syriacus, are prolific seeders, as you have painfully discovered. You could reduce the number of new plants by cutting off the spent flowers before they set seed, but doing this to 12 plants every year would be extremely tedious. I'd remove the existing offenders. Newer varieties, such as Diana and the Satin series, produce few or no seeds. So if you still want a rose of Sharon, try one of those. Scales of Injustice. Crepe myrtles line the street where we live in Raleigh, North Carolina. All of a sudden, white specks cover the bark. Are they the crepe myrtle bark scales? Kristen. Unfortunately, yes, and these insects are a serious pest. They multiply rapidly, encrust the bark, and feed on sap. Then they secrete a sticky honeydew that sooty mold grows on, and this turns the trunks and branches black. I've noticed that trees subjected to severe pruning, crepe murder, seem more susceptible, probably because the cutting stresses them. Contact insecticides don't kill these scales. The best control is treating the crepe myrtles with a systemic insecticide that the plants absorbed, called Bio-Advanced Tree and Shrub Insect Killer Spray. Repeat the process every April according to label directions. Pounding sand. We live in Little Rock. Our front yard is sloped and shady, so grass struggles to grow. We've laid sod several times, but it never lasts more than a couple of years. Michelle. No grass will grow in the shade, Michelle. Why don't you try what my neighbors successfully did in a similar situation? First, they got rid of the remaining grass and covered their hill with a thick layer of pine straw mulch that they replenish each spring. Hardwood and pine bark mulch work well too. Then they spaced out a number of low-growing Shishi Garcia camellias across the slope. These shrubs feature glossy evergreen foliage and deep pink flowers in autumn. Now that area looks tidy and never needs mowing. Power Company Pruning. We live in a small rural town in southern Illinois. A large and very old oak tree grows in our yard and we love it. The electric company wants to cut some of the longer limbs to make way for a new line. We're terrified of damaging this beauty. Kathy. Grumpy feels your pain. The power company has used its chainsaws in my yard, too. My advice when dealing with the workers is to avoid confrontation. Imagine me saying that. Request to be there when they cut. Tell the crew chief how much the oak tree means to you and ask them to please do the trimming as aesthetically as possible. Tree crews aren't used to friendly homeowners and will likely respond in a positive way. Good luck. Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. Pansies are supposed to be the magical answer to our yearning for winter color in the South. Frost-hardy and preferring cool temperatures, they supply bounteous blooms in multitudinous colors in containers and flower beds from the time you plant them in fall all the way through spring. They're supposed to, anyway, just not in my Alabama garden. They look fab at first, but inevitably an Arctic blast following mild weather turns them into pansy mush by January. They don't revive until spring, 2 weeks before it's time to rip them out for summer flowers. So, no pansies for me this year. Insert angry emoji. I'll get my mush from a dog. Cast iron plant. Looking for a gift for a brown-thumbed gardener? This is the one to pick. Many houseplants that are given as holiday presents go through three quick stages: living, dying, and dead. Here's a tough one that will actually last: the aptly named cast iron plant, Aspidistra elatior. Although it doesn't ask for abuse and fares better when treated well, it tolerates low light, infrequent watering, and lack of attention. Upright, arching, spear-shaped leaves with distinctive parallel veins grow 1 to 3 feet tall. For best results, give it well-drained potting soil, bright, indirect light, and slow-release organic fertilizer in the spring. Allow the soil to go dry between waterings. A showy selection called Variegata sports foliage striped with white from base to tip. Steve Bender. Ask the Grump. No question goes unanswered on his Facebook page, facebook.com/SLGrumpyGardener. That's all we have time for in this week's Southern Living Magazine program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Tolles. Thank you for tuning in. Keep it tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona for more great programming. And join us again next week for another Southern Living Magazine program.